And a very warm welcome to the North of Scotland Parkinson's Research Interest Group podcast. This is a special edition of our monthly podcast as we've joined forces with Parkinson's UK to do a special feature pod to align with a World Mental Health Day. I am without my wingman today, Helga, today, as she's unfortunately unable to join us for the recording. So my co-host today is Neil Morrison, a fellow NOSPRIG member, who's going to help to join me to hear about all things mental health, both thinking about how it affects people with Parkinson's and about the latest research in relation to mental health. So many of you have come across Neil before if you're from Scotland, so he's a strong research advocate and has participated in several Parkinson's research studies. So a very warm welcome to the pod today to Neil. Also, we are delighted to welcome to the pod two very distinguished guests. Firstly, a very warm welcome to Dr. Jennifer Foley and also to Emma Edwards. So Dr. Jennifer Foley is a senior clinical neuropsychologist at the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery and is an honorary lecturer at UCL Queen Square Institute of Neurology. And she has a specific interest in movement disorders, which is why she's joining us today. She is also the Parkinson's UK Excellence Network for Mental Health and is involved in a number of research studies looking at treatments for cognitive and emotional symptoms with people with Parkinson's. So we definitely have somebody with the expertise on the pod today. In addition, we're joined by Emma, who is a mental health nurse by background, but she has worked in various roles within psychiatry and has also worked as part of Cornwall's nurse team looking after people with Parkinson's. And she has a special interest in Parkinson's, looking at improving people's mental health for her patients, and has recently just been seconded to look at a suicide prevention training team to improve her knowledge in this area, which is very much under-researched area within Parkinson's research. And you'll notice within the blurb that goes with this pod, there's an information link there about the current resources that are provided by Parkinson's UK in relation to mental health. So it might be some additional reading that people want to look at after today's podcast. So why are we here to talk about mental health? And I suppose it has been a key. It's not just because it's Mental Health Awareness Days. Mental health symptoms in Parkinson's commonly present alongside the typical motor symptoms. And we very much see that anxiety and depression are two of the most common mental health symptoms that affect people with Parkinson's, alongside some other symptoms that you may be aware of in relation to apathy, hallucinations, dementia, and memory problems. And actually, it's as many as half the people living with Parkinson's live with one of these problems at any one time. So hence the reason it affects a large number of the population, and we really felt it was a pertinent area for us to cover within the pod. So today, what we're going to look at is we're going to look at current research in relation to mental health, what type of support is out there, what's the research behind them, who we need to contact, and thinking about signposting to various healthcare professionals. So we've got a lot to cover in this pod today, a lot of great material. So a very warm welcome to you all. And so I think what we're going to do is we're going to start with looking at anxiety. So I'm going to hand over to Neil, who's got some questions to ask about anxiety.
Yes, and the first question, which is hopefully quite simple, is what is anxiety? And following on from that, why do people like myself with Parkinson's suffer from anxiety and get anxiety?
I'll respond if that's okay, Emma. What is anxiety? So there are lots of different types of anxiety. I suppose what we're thinking about is anxiety disorders. So everyone gets anxiety depending on what they're doing. So if they're about to give a talk, maybe about to do a podcast or, you know, something like that, you might start to feel a bit anxious. And that's normal. That's your body's normal response to having to muster together sort of extra levels of adrenaline to help you with your performance. But when that topples over and you have too much of that feeling going on all of the time, too much adrenaline, then that can create the sense of wanting to get away from the situation, and that we might call the sort of fight or flight response. So when you're sort of faced with something that's particularly anxious, then you want to either sort of, your body is fueled with this adrenaline to be able to help you fight the situation or to get away from the situation. So that's the fight or flight response. And you might find yourself sort of having those sorts of like increased adrenaline just as a consequence of certain previously very enjoyable situations, like going into social scenarios or going shopping or something like that, might start to fill you with dread in that sense of, gosh, I don't think I can face this. Or it might be something to do with some of your Parkinson's symptoms. So a lot of people have off-state anxiety. So when their medications aren't working so well, they might find themselves feeling more anxious. And these, I suppose, are sort of two of the most common types of anxiety in Parkinson's. You can also get sort of panic disorder, where people start to feel particularly panicky. But it's more the social anxiety and that off-state anxiety, as well as a sort of general increase in worry that a lot of people have that with Parkinson's. So that's the typical aspects of sort of, or the typical characterization of anxiety disorders in Parkinson's. Why they seem to occur might be for lots of different reasons. I suppose the most common one that I'm thinking of, the most obvious one, is just the lack of control that Parkinson's can make you feel. I sometimes feel like Parkinson's is the sort of it's the neurological disorder most likely to make you feel like you don't have a sense of control over the future, because you don't know how it's going to progress. You don't know what your symptoms are going to be like, sometimes even from hour to hour. And that sense of sort of being dysregulated from your own body, somehow being excluded from your own body's normal controls, automatic controls, I think can be very anxiety provoking for people. And I think that's why it is so common. There's also the possibility that it might be something to do with the dysfunctional neurobiology that's underlying the Parkinson's itself. So it might be partly caused by the condition, but certainly it seems to make sense from the way in which it makes you feel about your body and your life, that it might engender that sort of anxiety. Emma, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
I think you summed it up rather brilliantly there. I think something from my point of view is that it can occur at any stage as well. It may be at the very beginning when you've got the diagnosis and you're worried about the future and, how you're going to explain this to your family and how are you going to cope with it. But later on as well, it can appear. So it can happen at any stage. So I think from a professional clinician point of view, I think it's really important to always check to see how people's mental state is, and if they are experiencing anxiety.
So with that, Emma, is there any strategies that you think that would be useful for people to help them manage their anxiety that you found that work quite well?
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, ultimately, it's good to talk about your worries, isn't it? And as a mental health nurse, that's been my sort of cornerstone of the therapies that I sort of deliver. So I think talking about it, trying to find out what is making you anxious. I've suffered with anxiety myself in the past, and it's recognizing those signs and it's recognizing those circumstances that might elevate your sort of anxiety. So finding out what's causing it, perhaps putting some strategies around that, seeing if we can help with what is making you anxious. You know, is there a situation, is there an issue that is that's making you worry? So can we do something tangible about that, first of all? But other things that I think help myself, I know help the people that I work with, are things like exercise. Julie, you'll be glad I'm saying that, I'm sure. But exercise is fantastic for anxiety. Having a really good sleep routine. I know, again, personally, that I can feel more anxious if I've slept really poorly. So sorting out your sleep is really good. And Julie alluded to this earlier about off-state anxiety. So getting a really good Parkinson's meds regime that works for you can be so helpful in managing that. Things like distraction as well. Some of my patients recently that I've been working with have found writing things down. So journaling, I think, is the new expression for it. Keeping a diary, keeping an eye on when they're feeling anxious and sort of the reasons around that. And then there's some good sort of health lifestyle advice, like if you're smoking, perhaps looking at that, maybe quitting, limiting your coffee. Unfortunately, maybe limiting your alcohol if that's your thing. But I think as well, something that I know helped me personally, has helped my patients, is having a really good support network around you as well. And I think those are pretty good things for lowering or managing anxiety.
So following on that from that, I mean, we, as you said, we all suffer from anxiety, but how do we know when we should be looking for interventions, from elsewhere? Because, you know, everyone who has Parkinson's have had the conversation with the consultant where he goes, I'm sorry to tell you, you have Parkinson's, and you're thrown into a whole new strange world of things you've never heard about before. How do you know when it's just normal anxiety or you need help?
When you first get the diagnosis, obviously you go through this whole period of adjusting to what that is, what that means for you, what you can do about it. And that sort of period of adjustment can take a while, and in a sense is a bit like a sort of grief, right, where you're sort of going through that state, the cycles of coming to terms with this this new news and sort of one working out what your life is going to look like with that diagnosis. And so I think all types of emotions are normal in that sort of adjustment phase of feeling, you know, angry, sad, anxious. Sometimes people feel relieved that, you know, they've got that diagnosis and it's not something else that they were. I mean, I've had a couple of patients tell me recently that they thought they had motor neuron disease. So when they were told they had Parkinson's, they felt pretty relieved. And it could be lots of different types of emotions that come to the fore, and those emotions are just normal and they'll fluctuate, and none of that is pathological, none of that needs to be medicated or anything like that. That's just completely normal. But you know, after a while those feelings will start to give way and will enable you to have some thoughts about, well, okay, so I've got Parkinson's, what can I do about this? What's the best way to live with this? And if that doesn't happen, if you find yourself sort of stuck in this sort of negative feeling of not being able to cope, or it's stopping you from doing things, like maybe you're just not going out and seeing anyone, or maybe you're not able to work anymore, or you just can't get out of bed, then they're all signs that, you know, maybe talking about it, about your mood specifically, anxiety or low mood, and they often go together, is a really good idea, just to try to reach out and get some support for those sorts of emotions. So it's really when it's stopping you from doing things, that should be the alarm that goes off that says, okay, so now we need to do something about this.
Now, this is, of course, is a research podcast. So what I'd like to know is, from a research perspective, what do we know about anxiety? Is there any sort of chemical triggers? Is there some magic test you can do? And what treatments or interventions appear effective? I know Emma's already sort of covered that a bit, but maybe you could put the scientific basis behind why these work.
So what do we know about anxiety? So in general, and in Parkinson's, we don't actually know a huge amount. So even though it's the most common sort of mental health symptom in Parkinson's, we don't actually know too much about it. We don't really know what it is that causes it. We don't really know the best way of treating it yet. And partly that's because it's the sort of Cinderella of Parkinson's symptoms. You know, it's these sorts of non-motor symptoms have been less well researched, let's say, than the motor symptoms, and so we don't really know a heck of a lot. But what we do know is that it's extremely common, and particularly anxiety, and it can present with or without low mood depression. We know that if you have it, it can often be quite persistent. It doesn't often respond very well to treatment, and that's partly because of the treatments that we have aren't particularly effective yet, or because we don't have enough mental health practitioners perhaps. So it can be a bit stubborn depending on the type of anxiety that you have, and often people will go on antidepressants that can be targeted for the anxiety itself. We don't have very many good randomized controlled trials on anxiety medications. We have one randomized controlled trial showing us the effectiveness of cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a psychological treatment, a talking therapy for anxiety, but it isn't widely available on the NHS for sort of specialist mental health therapies for Parkinson's disease. So really, we don't know a lot, and we don't have a lot of the resources that should be there to help people with it. And so there's a heck of a lot more that needs to happen in terms of the research and the support made available.
Not that I want to bring exercise into every podcast that we do, although, you know, it is me, so I feel it needs to be mentioned. I think that's something that Emma did touch upon. And while, you know, it's probably also an under-researched area about the impact of exercise on anxiety and non-motor symptoms, I would certainly say from all the participants who attend classes that I've been involved with, I think what they do provide is that environment for shared learning about experience. And I think when you're diagnosed with a complex condition such as Parkinson's, when anything goes wrong in your life, it's very easy to put everything in the Parkinson's basket and blame everything on Parkinson's. And quite sometimes it's like, well, your leg's sore because you did that big walk yesterday, or, you know, you still get all the other ailments that come with life. And I think actually it is the group-based exercise where you bring people together. It gives them a safe space where they can speak about their condition and how it affects them as individuals, and also it reduces anxiety, I find, because people feel that they don't need to explain that funny movement that they do with their arm or their leg, or they don't need to do that. And so I think it's a difficult one for us to manage from a research point of view. It's difficult to measure because it presents differently in different people, but also I think one of the key things people do is meeting other people to help try to reduce some of those anxieties, because I think it's, as both Jennifer and Emma have alluded to, it's the anxiety of being diagnosed and the scared of the unknown and what the future may hold, and anxiety presents in different ways at different times, isn't it? It's a difficult one, isn't it? It's a difficult one to capture.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the exercise is really key, actually, and that's one of the things I say to every patient that I speak to, is that, you know, exercise is your way of battling this, as alongside sort of increasing your social network and getting out and actually doing things that you enjoy. A lot of people find themselves just sort of doing chores and not actually prioritizing positive activities. And so you think you can actually combine all three of those by just doing an exercise class with other people with Parkinson's that's enjoyable. And then you've ticked all those boxes all together. So I think that's a really good way of managing anxiety and worries, is actually to do something about it positively and to do it in a social group. Yeah.
We've already sort of strayed on to the next question. What can carers do to help, people they know with Parkinson's? Is there any sort of advice we can give them? Because, of course, they're in a whole new world. The person they've, you know, possibly been with for, you know, decades of their life is suddenly no longer the same person. They've got a whole new set of factors that they have to worry about. So have you got any advice for carers?
Could I pop onto this one? I think something that is a really easy thing that a care partner, a supporter can do is distraction. So sometimes with anxiety, and again, I talk from personal experience, but I know from, you know, working with people with Parkinson's, you can go down a hole mentally, you know, with anxiety, that, you know, those thoughts are quite loud, those feelings are sort of overwhelming, and sometimes you just kind of need to get out of the room. You need to change your environment or your activity. So I think my advice would be for somebody that was watching or being with somebody going through that, is maybe encouraging them to do something a little bit different. Let's go out for a walk. Let's go to the kitchen and just make a cup of tea together. You know, I think distraction is really powerful and really simple to do as well.
I totally agree with everything you say. You could also perhaps just add in making sure you look after your own mental health as a carer. So, you know, as you say, you know, it can be really frightening for people supporting someone with Parkinson's, and you know, what the diagnosis means for them as well, and actually just looking after one's own mental health is really important. So perhaps, you know, making sure that you have time and space to chat to your friends or family, exercise yourself, you know, making sure that you know how to access extra support when and as you need it. All the above.
Thank you very much. I'm just about to go on to my hobby horse. Julie has her hobby horse, which is exercise. Mine is dogs are a wonderful thing because they provide distraction and, you know, they make you do things so they can pull you out of if you're in a bad frame of mood. But quite often there's things that trigger anxiety. You know, I know myself when I've had periods of anxiety, it's particular social situations or things. Quite often you see with some people with Parkinson's that they become more and more anxious about going into an environment, you know, a social environment, either because of their symptoms or just because, you know, they have a Parkinson's diagnosis and they no longer feel able to mix. Can that become a established behavior? Am I using the right sort of words? Or
I think actually the same thing does work even if you have Parkinson's. You know, the more and more you just actually face the scenario that you find a bit frightening, say going into a social group, the more you go into that, the more you just keep repeating that, the better, the less anxiety you feel. So I had a patient tell me, you know, that he was really anxious sort of socializing, but actually, you know, I think his daughter was getting married and he had to just face a whole bunch of different social encounters. And it just actually got much easier for him every single time. I think it's also, it's definitely the symptoms. It's also the fear of how people will respond to the symptoms, isn't it? You know, so it's sometimes you're going in there with these negative thoughts or like of maybe everyone's going to see my tremor or whatever, and they're going to think I'm blah, blah, blah. And it's about sort of trying to battle that internal voice that's telling you that, you know, you're not going to be able to handle the situation or that the situation is going to somehow just result in some catastrophe. And it's about actually, you know, if you go into that situation, you'll see that it doesn't result in a catastrophe, that you can actually manage that situation, that lots of people are there to support you, and that you going there, feeling a bit of anxiety, but actually getting the most out of the situation by being there and seeing your friends, actually results in a better mood overall than if you were to stay at home in the first place. So it's better just to keep on facing the fear and doing it anyway. I think is best. It's the best way forward.
There's lots of nods there from everybody going, yeah, that seems a good idea. Definitely. I mean, I certainly notice a lot of anxiety, particularly with, you know, people have got freezing of gait. They start freezing, you know, at a doorway. And then over time, because they know that they're going to freeze at that doorway, they start to get anxious before they've even got to the doorway. So it's interesting also from your perspective, it's about, you know, thinking about what strategies could help break down some of the problems about getting through a doorway and tackling it rather than activity avoidance, really, more than anything.
Yeah, I think people get quite anxious about, you know, things like that. And also, you know, getting money out at the supermarket till or something like that, anything that they can see is coming their way and that's going to be a bit of a stretch for them. And I think it's just about sort of coming up with strategies, you know, as Emma was saying beforehand, what is the situation that's causing the anxiety? And then trying to think of specific strategies that can actually combat that. So maybe, you know, if it's freezing of gait, maybe it's about having some sort of, you know, song in your head that you can use to try to maintain some sort of gait rhythm or something, or having some sort of external aid to help you, or, you know, whatever it is that you found to help you with their specific situation, as well as Emma was saying earlier, it's about reducing general levels of anxiety. So it's by doing things like exercising frequently, you know, looking after yourself by getting enough sleep. So there's sort of the general sort of reduction of anxiety plus also the specific situation. But by just coming up with strategies, forearmed is, you know, really good to be able to cope with these situations. So for example, if you're worried about going into a social scenario Maybe it's about before you going in thinking, right, well, as soon as I go in, I'm going to go and speak to this person because I know they might need some help in this social scenario. So maybe, you know, if you can find a way of getting in there and speaking to someone quickly, then that will reduce your sort of general level of feeling anxious or that people are looking at you. So it's coming up with some sort of strategy in advance that might help just take the edge off that anticipatory anxiety.
Jennifer, some of my patients I work with find the Headspace app quite helpful, which is a kind of, I suppose it's based in mindfulness with a little bit of CBT thrown in there. Would you recommend, see, I'm asking the questions. I'm very sorry, Neil, I'm taking your job here. But certainly some of the strategies are really helpful, and I'm thinking of one particular patient who, before they go out to a social situation which they know is going to make them feel anxious, they'll listen to a short sort of blast of a mindfulness podcast, I suppose, and it lowers their anxiety, makes them feel more in control. I'm not entirely sure about the research base behind mindfulness. I know there's a bit with Parkinson's, isn't there? I don't know if you're aware.
Yeah, there is a bit, and you know, but it's one of these things where it's a bit like horses for courses. I think, you know, if it's something that works for you, it works for you. Not, but it doesn't work for everyone. But if you find that, you know, doing some sort of meditative practice, maybe it's a breathing exercise, maybe it's a visualization, maybe it's a general progressive muscular relaxation exercise, anything like that that you can do that reduces your general level of arousal before you, like that sort of body tension that you might be holding, or slows down your breathing, is all the better. Because when you're anxious, what happens is that your muscles tense up and your breathing becomes more rapid and shallow. So the more that you can do in advance of going into an anxiety provoking situation to sort of slow all that down and to make you feel nice and jelly and sort of relaxed is best. And so that's a sort of general anxiety reduction. And then I think if you were able to do that, plus you go in with strategies, then after a while, you probably won't need strategies and probably you won't need to do those sorts of meditative practices beforehand. But, you know, sometimes the phobias or the worries become quite ballooned in our mind that you can't do X, Y, Z because you have Parkinson's. And it's just about sort of trying to break some of that down to stop you from feeling that something is outside of your reach and to enable you to keep doing the things that you like to do.
Another sort of aspect of anxiety that myself and other people have found is when you've had a stressful situation where you would have experienced anxiety, the next day or so, your normal Parkinson's symptoms actually are worse because you just, you know, you feel drained, you're more likely to, your tremors are worse and things. Is there any way of counteracting that? Or is it something we just have to be aware of and expect?
Yeah, I see that quite often, you know, when people are doing or in quite anxious situations or situations that I just find really draining, like so when they're doing cognitive testing, for example, and with me in the hospital sort of doing these tests of memory and concentration, people's physical symptoms really become much more pronounced and they might find themselves wearing off a bit quicker. So that's when the medication isn't working quite so well. And you know, it's quite unexpected for them. And I'm sure, you know, they go home and they're drained and then that will have a knock-on effect on the next day. So I think, you know, it's about pacing yourself. If you know you're going to be having a particularly busy or stressful day, it's about building in that time for relaxation and sleep and looking after yourself for afterwards. So it's about sort of, I think pacing is the only thing I can think of, as well as sort of, just being aware of the things that make you feel more anxious and sort of finding ways around it. Emma, you might have some better suggestions.
No, absolutely. That pacing. And again, you know, every day is a school day as we kind of cope with getting older. And it's knowing, well, I know I'm going to be knackered. I'm going to, after this event that I'm going to the evening before, let's have a quiet day the next day. So yeah, I agree, absolutely, pacing and just knowing how your body works and reacts. And I know sometimes with Parkinson's you can't sort of foreguess what how it's going to cope with certain situations. But generally, people kind of notice patterns, and it's kind of building strategies around that.
Wow. Thank you so much, Jennifer and Emma. That was an amazing podcast. Wow. We've covered everything to why anxiety arises in Parkinson's. We've covered top tips about how best to develop strategies to help you manage living with anxiety more effectively. And we've really also touched on research that's been undertaken in the UK in relation to anxiety. So really, what a whistle-stop tour of anxiety. And really, I think we could have gone talking about this subject for ages, because although many people don't like talking about anxiety in Parkinson's, it affects so many people living with the condition, but also those people that live their lives with somebody else affected by Parkinson's. So a huge thank you to Jennifer and Emma for sharing your expertise on this topic area. Thank you again. And thank you, Neil, for being my wingman today on your first Nosbrig pod. You've done a fab job. Okay, as I mentioned right at the beginning of the call, these podcasts have been released a week early for us at Nosbrig, really because we're delivering these podcasts in conjunction with Parkinson's UK to recognise World Mental Health Day. So if you've enjoyed this podcast with Jennifer and Emma on anxiety, we have another podcast which is ready to download right now, which is on another key non-motor symptom that's very common in Parkinson's. So we're going to be talking about depression, and again, similar format where we're going to talk about why depression is quite prevalent within Parkinson's, what we know about depression in Parkinson's, and then equally, you know, share our experiences of some good ways and practical tips about how we can positively enhance our mood when we're working either with people with Parkinson's or for those who are living with Parkinson's, how they can optimize their mood. So it's there, ready for you to download whenever you're ready. The other podcast is available. I hope you enjoy. Speak to you all soon. Bye.